Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
What's happening? Got a good show today. Tiki and Tierney, come on in. Come on down. Tiki and Tierney here on this Wednesday around the country, coming in from our studios. A lot of LeBron out of the shoe. 10-year anniversary. Wow. The Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. 10-year anniversary, the day that LeBron let us all know that he was bouncing Cleveland, going to Miami, taking the talents, hooking up with his buddy Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. And, you know, listen, it has forever changed the template of not just the way the annals of the NBA record books will reflect in terms of champions and MVPs and other awards, et cetera, but also the empowerment of the modern athlete to go and pursue their ultimate happiness. So we got a lot to hit. TK, how you doing today, buddy?
Yeah, I'm doing great, man. And it is funny we talk about this day because I remember it. AJ turned 8 when LeBron James decided to leave Cleveland and head to Miami. So in that vein, happy 18th birthday to my oldest son,
nice.
Team Junior, who turned 18 today. Yeah, so it's cool. It's funny because that's how I kind of remember it. Buddy. It was AJ's birthday. He was turning 8 years old. He's still a little kid.
Yeah.
And LeBron James's press conference was taking place up in Greenwich, Connecticut. Interestingly, also where AJ lives now with his mom and my older kids, and the Boys and Girls Club was the big benefactor, and that often got forgotten. Now it's readily referenced, and it's a good thing though, because that was really what it was all about. LeBron was trying to do the right thing by a great organization, and having this made for TV event about free agency. But you know, honestly, BT, it was the first time, in all seriousness, it was the first time that I think I looked at free agency as an option for a player. I'd always felt like, yeah, there are a couple of places that a player could go. This is football and basketball, but particularly in basketball, it was almost like it was preordained where a guy was going. Like it'd been talked about 3 or 4 times. Well, maybe we'll get a trade done before he actually becomes free, or we'll get this long-term deal signed before he actually becomes free. It was really the first time that I can remember. Free agency's been around. But it was the first time I remember someone sitting down and saying, I have all of these choices. It was almost like picking your college for National Signing Day, right? I have all of these choices. Where am I going? And LeBron James, one of the superstars of the league, picks the Miami Heat hat. And it was kind of like cool. I mean, I could understand the backlash and everything.
Yep.
But it was kind of cool in a way that didn't, because you hadn't seen it before like that.
Well, the execution wasn't incredibly cool, but we've been down there. We don't need to rehash that.
No.
It is what he was.
Yeah, I mean, who cares
about
that? He raised $2 million for the Boys and Girls Club of America. Whenever someone says, "Oh, it looked terrible," okay, but he raised $2 million.
He did a good thing, you know. And the amount of times we've seen that since, I mean, that's going to, if it hasn't already reached, or will eventually reach in terms of, you know, a proportionate play. The amount of times we've heard Lou Gehrig's speech on July 4th when he let the whole world know that he was dying. And he said, you know, today, day, I consider myself self.
Right.
Obviously, luckiest man on the face of the earth, but obviously a very different tone. One was somber. One was, you know, just catapulting him to the next phase of his career. But what jumps out to me about LeBron is, especially now, you see all the videos, you see the way he comports himself. There's this uber confidence. There's this you know, this self-assuredness that is beyond compromise. I mean, he's just very much in control, and he has been for a long time. Those moments with Jim Gray, he was vulnerable. He was trying to please. He was trying to placate. You could tell he was nervous. He was not in control. Hey, listen, the day, you know, we won't see anything like that again, because you might see some sort of coordinated announcement. I don't mean that. But that was, you know, Twitter, was Twitter that popular in 2010? Not really.
Nope.
There was no Instagram in 2010. Nope. No Snapchat.
I don't think I had any of those things. And maybe I had Facebook.
You know, I caved. I caved late to Facebook. I was definitely not on. I may have barely been on Twitter, maybe. But I was definitely not on Facebook. But you were on pins and needles in all the different markets. Like the Knicks thought they had a shot to get him. The Brooklyn Nets thought that when they were moving to Brooklyn, thought they had a chance to get him. The Chicago Bulls were really in. Dwayne Wade had a second visit there, and the initial play was to go and get LeBron and Chris Bosh for the Bulls. Obviously, the Cavaliers were hoping he'd stay put. But the mechanics of the day for me, I think I told the story a long time ago. I'll keep it real quick because I want to get into more stuff with LeBron. But the phone rings in the newsroom. I'm doing local radio in New York. This is 2010, obviously. Phone rings in the newsroom, and they ask for me, right? During a commercial break. Pick it up. They said, hey, we just want to give you... Nobody knew where the announcement was at this point. This was a couple of hours before. It was early in my show, right? And they said... we want to let you know it's going to be up in Greenwich, Connecticut, which is what, Teak, 70 miles from New York, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. Probably 60? Less than that. Probably
right,
55
right.
or 70 from me in Jersey. So yeah. Probably it's 50 miles from New York.
Yep. At that point, my station is literally in Madison Square Garden. So I'm right by the Lincoln Tunnel, probably 50 miles, 55, whatever it is. And the person, I still don't, to this day, don't know who it was. And they said LeBron is going to make this announcement on ESPN. At the Boys and Girls Club in Connecticut. And now, you know, all I can deduce is, all right, they know I'm a big Knicks guy. Mm-hmm. Stephen A. wasn't at the station at that moment. We weren't doing the show together. He was doing whatever. But he wasn't there. This was later in the day. Otherwise, I would have told him. And he broke the story about a week or so ago. He's the one who actually said he's going to go to Miami. Not everybody bought it, but Stephen did have the report. So now I'm left to decipher. This is 10 years ago for me, too, so I'm not a kid, but it's not like I'm entrenched in the business for 20 years. I'm like, all right, how do I handle this? I mean, I'm not going to go on the air and say LeBron's coming to the Knicks because they're doing this 55 miles from the Garden, but logistically, how could I not think that? It turned out, you know, I positioned it carefully to make sure that I had a little out. I wasn't wrong. I wasn't right because I never really staked a claim. But all these years later, you know what I think about? Forget about the Knicks and the actual teams for a moment. What I think about is I believe, and this isn't probed into too deeply, I think it should be, the reason why he gets lambasted, you know, first of all, there's some haters who are just predisposed to hate, but those who really take issue still with the ill-conceived announcement, the decision, is because of what he did to his hometown. To me, that's the boiling point.
Yeah.
Not that I begrudge him for leaving. It's your choice.
Yeah,
you're a free agent.
That's what free agency means. It's what it's supposed to be.
But you could have been a little more aware of the dagger you were about to stick into the soul, the heart of Cavalier fans on national TV.
Yeah. No,
that's
look,
the problem.
But it's also, you know, how he said it, and it almost made you think, before we knew that there were issues between LeBron James and management with the Cleveland Cavaliers, that there were ultimately issues between LeBron James and the management of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Like, and I think it was this, you know, in addition to, you know, spurning his hometown team, who have followed him from his youth days through high school and, you know, his early years in Cleveland, and he's just walking away from them. And then he has this I don't know, Uber implies something like positive. It was like over confidence that he was changing the world of basketball.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm taking my talents.
It was delusional at that moment.
That's right.
What
that's
happened
right.
up on that stage.
That's right. Like,
delusional.
You can't forget.
They disrespected the process of being an athlete.
Well.
And the competition.
Well, yes, maybe. But what he did.
Not intentionally, though.
Exactly. That's the thing. That's what I think it is, BT. And look, it's indelible in our minds. And fortunately, we have it. So if you've forgotten how he said it, this is LeBron.
Jim Gray. So nervous. Not a lot of applause, LeBron. Boy, it seems like such a joyless moment.
That's right.
Right?
And so it's almost like... I don't know. I don't know if it's like he really struggled with it.
Yeah.
And
sure
then
did.
wasn't really excited about it when he said it, because that wasn't like, I'm going to South Beach.
No.
I can't wait to play with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh and, you know, Eric Spoelstra, who was his young coach. Nobody knew at the time, but yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, it didn't feel like it was with conviction. It was kind of dismissive. Like, I'm going to take my talent to South Beach.
And I wouldn't use the word dismissive.
Sorry, Cleveland.
Yeah. I wouldn't say dismissive. I would disagree with that. I would say there was trepidation.
Maybe, yeah. It's whatever
like,
it
dismissive
is.
Dismissive is like, whatever. I don't care about you. It wasn't coming from a place of malice.
Listening to LeBron now.
He was confused.
And again, the problem is we compare him how he talks now to how he presented himself then.
Yeah.
And back then, there wasn't that much confidence in his voice. You know what I mean? There wasn't this, I know I'm a champion in his voice yet. It was, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach, but almost like, I hope this works.
Not like
this is going to work. Now, when they get down there and they have an introductory press conference, it's obnoxious. Like, not one, not two, not three.
Yeah. It wrapped up in a moment. Yeah.
When he was down there, he was confident. But when he was sitting in Greenwich, Connecticut at the Boys and Girls Club announcing that he was leaving Cleveland and heading to Miami, it didn't sound confident at all. Now, it was a profound moment because it shaped how superstars in free agency address it now. They're not beholden. They don't feel afraid to have their jerseys burned or, you know, fan ire, because I think they know that fans are still going to watch. There's always going to be a percentage of the fandom that just hates you because you're not on their team. Mm. And so no matter, you might as well do it your way. And LeBron created that, which is indelible, and it's lasting in the NBA.
I would agree. Well said. It was also one of the first times where there was this incredible orchestration on the part of the athlete to circumvent the national media. Like, Jim Gray was handpicked. The location was handpicked. And again, Stephen A. did have it a week before. I remember it very well. And a lot of people, you know, marginalized the report that it was going to be with Miami, because it was about a week or so before it actually came to fruition. But if you think about this, this was the first like concerted effort to use the media via a different blueprint, a different navigation.
Yeah, as
different
a tool.
Route,
yeah,
a different
as a tool.
Tool.
Yeah, like the media was a tool as opposed to something that was just observing and reporting. He used it as a tool.
He controlled it as much as he could.
That's
correct.
Right. It was almost social media-esque. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like social media wasn't around like that then.
Not
but it
like
was
that.
Almost social media-esque, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have something I want to say. I'm going to put it out on my own terms. Nowadays, it's Twitter or Instagram or whatever.
Yep.
Back then, he used this special for a positive purpose, which I'll always remind people, and raised $2 million as his like social media. Everybody was watching.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Just like his millions of followers now, everybody was watching. And it was the only way he could have done it like that.
You know, 10 years is a poll question, and I'm very curious. There's a little something here that I think is pretty interesting, because there's a couple of different ways to perceive the actual four-year run in Miami. I mean, once you get past the presentation of the announcement and all that other stuff that Teek and I just hit, you know, there is a little something to be said for dissecting accurately what actually transpired during the 4 years of Miami. Here's the poll question. 10 years later, how would you rate LeBron's run in Miami? Three options: epic / transcendent, very good / delivered, or fell short of hype. Mm. And this is one of those where I'm not trying to, you know, steer anybody to voting, you know, how I think you should, but I don't even think this is a very good poll question, because quite frankly, and I put it up, I think there's only one answer. And the answer has to be very good / delivered. You can't, I guess technically you could say fell short of hype.
Yeah.
Because he didn't, you know, 5-6. All right, he delivered 2. Got it. That's a little hyperbolic. You got to give him a pass. He was a little drunk on the moment. It's all fun. Whatever. You can't say epic transcendent, and this I really strongly believe, you can't say that it was an epic transcendent run, because the Miami run was not even the most dynastic run of its decade.
True.
That was the Warriors.
True. It's true. And it wasn't the most dynastic of all the ones that LeBron played in, because he played in all those. He played in both, right? I mean, he went to 8 straight finals, I believe. four with Miami.
But in terms of winning,
I know.
Twice.
But I'm saying he was a part of a different dynasty he's on the part of both dynasties. Right? These two mini dynasties.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
But on both sides of it, one as a winner, like two of four, and then one as a loser.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yes, I got you.
He lost all those to the Golden State Warriors.
Uh-huh. That is, although without him, it would have been sweeps every year.
True.
But I hear you. He was on the wrong end of history there. But it is interesting to dissect it that way. It's not like we have to say, well, you know, boy, man, LeBron, all right, maybe most people thought he'd win maybe one more. But, boy, I'll tell you what, you know, those Lakers and the Celtics in the mid-'80s, yeah, you know, really, after them, look, that Miami run was, boy, that was the run.
Yeah.
I mean, forget about that. You go back to the Rockets who won back-to-back. You go back to the Pistons who went back-to-back. You go back to, obviously, most recently, the Warriors set a single-season record for wins and multiple championships. Like, they weren't even the best team of the decade.
That's right.
But think about that in the terms of July 8th, 2010. Imagine if Jim Gray would have said, okay, so it's Miami? I got you. Well, I've got this little intel here, and you might not buy it tonight, LeBron, but trust me, this will come to fruition. I promise you. This has been given to me by the sporting gods because I've been around a long time. Because I badgered Pete Rose. They gave me this little nugget. And they told me that, yeah, you'll do pretty well in Miami. You'll win a couple. But within 10 years, there will be a franchise that pretty much laps what you and Bosch and D-Wade accomplish in Miami. What do you think everybody's reaction would have been? Like, and then if you would have said it was the Warriors who were horrendous.
Yeah, but the game changed.
Well, I mean, at that point, they weren't good.
True, but the game was changing.
But you didn't know it that night.
I know, but I'm saying, but it was changing. Right? Yeah. They lost to the Dallas Mavericks. They had no business losing to the Dallas Mavericks.
No, they did, because they made fun of Dirk Nowitzki for being sick, and they deserved to lose that.
True.
And I was so happy. Number one, I wanted to see Dirk win. I love their coach. You know I love Rick. I love Cuban. I wanted to see them lose that. That was such a childish display from a bunch of Hall of Famers.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree, BT. But from a on-paper standpoint, they shouldn't have lost that series.
I agree.
They lost because basketball hadn't evolved. Yeah. It wasn't as much movement, right? Playing small, and LeBron James is having to guard bigs in some of these situations that were bad, and they bring in Shane Batty, and it changes the entire circumstance. And so they win a couple. And then at the end, the reason he doesn't stay for number 5 or 6 or 7 like he tried to is because Dwayne Wade broke down.
Yes.
Right? Ultimately, the reason he went back to Cleveland is because the one piece of the triangle was falling apart.
It's fair. That is very fair. I want to check one thing because I feel as if – I want to make sure my memory is not betraying me here. Let me see. What did Dirk shoot that series? He shot – let's see. Dirk was averaged 40 minutes, 26 points a game, 10 rebounds, couple of assists – shot 98% from the free throw line. Only 42% from the field. Jason Terry hit a lot of big shots. Tyson Chandler was very good. Marion was pretty good as well. Jay Kidd influential. But that is, Tiki's right, on paper, that is a series that they have no business losing that series.
Yeah.
None at all.
But
that's got to be held against them.
That does.
And it is.
It should be, and it certainly is, dude.
Yep. All right, so, you know, as we remember LeBron's decision, and we'd love to get some reaction to this, whether it's on Twitter, at Tiki and Tierney, 1-855-212-4227. How do you categorize LeBron's 4-year run with Miami, and really everything that's happened since? I think more directly, based on the player movement, can we look back and say, forget about LeBron for a moment, but in totality, that it was a good thing for the NBA? A lot of things have changed since then. A lot of player movement, short contracts. Do you like that as fans? I can make a strong case that it's a bad thing. And here's something else. So the Lakers are prepared to give one of their guys a ring, even though he's not going to show up in the bubble if they win. We'll get to that as well. Tiki and Tierney on a Wednesday, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. All right, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free lines, 1-855-212-4227 on this Wednesday. Talk a little LeBron out of the chute, some hoops. 10 years ago tonight, the decision. All right, the number is 855-212-4CBS, brought to you by Geico. Do you know that right now, Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle and RV policies. That's on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. All right, coming up next, inbounds, out of bounds, and the Dodgers, probably more out of symbolism at this point, because I don't think he's their best pitcher. I believe that would be Buehler. He's their second best pitcher, but the Dodgers announcing that Clayton Kershaw will get the pearl on opening day. We'll debate, is the downswing in his career, the descent, officially upon us? That's coming up in inbounds, out of bounds. One of the questions Samter threw together. You know, to me, Teak, all right, and we'll get to the Lakers with Avery Bradley, which is pretty interesting. But if you want to really, like, if you want to snuff out, and this is why I think when you go back to specific moments in history, rather than the totality of one's accomplishments, right, in trying to gauge a pecking order of the greatest of all time or a top 10 list, whatever it might be, I think it's a bit of a disservice and very misleading when you just view it from that macro snapshot. Because we don't think that LeBron is better than Michael, but a lot of people do, right? A lot of younger fans.
Yeah, well, it's a recency bias thing. It's what you've seen and what you know. It's like having the conversation with, I don't know, some of the old time greats, Oscar Robertson, who I just never saw play. I mean, nope. I could watch highlights, but I didn't feel the emotion of his dominance in real time.
I got you. And LeBron, you know, if you want to make that argument that he's better than Jordan, you just look at, well, he very well might have more points than Kareem when it's all said and done, yep. 37,000, whatever it is. You know, he's going to be top three, top four in assists. He's going to be top 12, 10 in rebounds, you know, MVPs, multiple teams. He opened up the door for superpowers if you want to use that as a weapon, right? But, you know what you could really use against LeBron? And this is why the power of real time is paramount here. You know what he did against the Dallas Mavericks in that series?
It wasn't good. It was less than 20 points a game. I know that much.
Averaged less than 18 points per game. 17.8 points per game.
Wow.
He shot, now he's never been a dead-eye three-point shooter, but he shot 32% from behind the arc, okay?
That wasn't his game then.
No, it wasn't, but he still took a few. Yeah. Just didn't hit them. He shot a ghastly 60% from the free throw line.
Oh.
60. And we've seen him, you know, clunk a few when it matters. He was 26 and he was in season number 8. Can you ever imagine Michael Jordan doing that against a team, by the way, your favorite in Vegas to win against?
No, you can't. And that's why that debate ends and stops sometimes with LeBron's losses. Not necessarily his victories or lack thereof of catching up to Michael, but it's how he lost some of those series. It's the same conversation that keeps James Harden from being in someone's top three of current players right now, right? Because he's a great scorer, we know that. But there's been moments where he just hasn't shown up, and playoff moments where he hasn't shown up, and that often lingers more than the successes at times, especially when you're debating straws here as opposed to cinder blocks. So I think it is interesting when you look at LeBron's history, because it is very unique, and we widely consider him the greatest player of this generation. But I think because of how this movement of player that we're just talking about, he empowered, it's made it almost impossible for him to do what Michael Jordan did, right? Because once KD went, they beat the Golden State Warriors once, but once KD got there, forget it. There was no chance.
No.
You know what I mean? And so, what he created is also preventing him from being as dominant as Michael Jordan once was.
Boy, it's really interesting to look at it that way.
I hear you.
So, Avery Bradley, pretty interesting situation. Let's push this forward a couple of months. Let's say there's a finish to the NBA season.
Yeah, let's get through this thing first.
Let's hope there's a start.
That's right.
So, but let's just push it forward. Lakers are the champions. Lakers win. LeBron delivers, not in the manner anybody thought, with no fans and in a bubble, but he delivers. And he handles business, and it's a continuation of his dominance from the regular season. He and Giannis Antetokounmpo, the two best players for sure, right? 1-2. Giannis, the MVP, LeBron right there. Avery Bradley, as we know, who has started, I want to say, 44 out of 49 games, I think, if I recall from that stat from last week. You know, modest minutes, 24, 25 a game. Good defender, could get a little loose and knock in some threes here and there. but largely, I don't want to say inconsequential to what they do, but certainly not a key spoke in the wheel. He is elected not to go to the bubble. Got to respect that. Okay. The Lakers have said that if they do win, they'll give him a ring. And I'm actually okay with that. What I wouldn't be okay with is if he ever accepted, which for the record, he said he's unsure what he would do. Yeah. If you're Avery Bradley, there is no way you could take that ring.
Why not? I don't understand
why not?
This. Why would you not take the ring?
Why would you?
Because you were part of what set the team up to be where they are right now, which is likely to be the number one seed in the Western Conference once the playoffs start. They're gonna have to lose all eight games basically to lose the one seed, I think, because they're up by four and a half or something like that. So they're going to be the one seed, and part of that process was Avery Bradley. And given the circumstances that are surrounding basketball right now, away from your family, in a bubble with coronavirus, the pandemic, you know, influencing everybody's decision, you're part of that team. And I'll tell you that there's precedent for this.
Oh, right? Really?
It's in football, there is.
Okay.
So so Greg Camella, who is my
running back.
I mean, not Greg Camella, Jim Finn. Greg was my first fullback, but Jim Finn was my second fullback with the New York Giants. And my great years happened with Jim Finn leading the way for me. And Finney, when he knew I was retiring, he's like, man, you're leaving? I'm banged up. I don't know if I want to play another season if you're not going to be here. But he ended up staying. He hurt his shoulder, and I think it was in training camp. I don't even think he played a game. He hurt his shoulder in training camp, and went on injured reserve. So he didn't play a down, but he was on the team. They obviously won the Super Bowl, and he has a ring.
That's different.
But it's not. It's
no,
the
it
same.
Is though. He didn't, because he didn't willingly opt out.
Yeah, but this,
he got hurt.
But he's opting out for a very viable reason.
I respect it. I wouldn't view him as a champion. I respect the decision not to go. There's no way. And if he ever wore it, oh, come on.
Yeah, but think about the guy. So if a front office executive gets a championship ring for being a part of a championship team, should they not wear it either?
Why? Of course they should wear it. They made decisions to help construct the roster.
So what if, I don't know, somebody who is non-essential personnel.
I need to know, like, in what like, the guy who parks their Ferraris when they come into the stadium?
I don't know. Whoever. The guy who serves the food. I don't know. Like, whoever it may be. If he gets a championship.
He's not on the Lakers payroll. He's on the Staples payroll. You think of the concessionaire?
Whoever,
the team chef?
Whoever the team chef. So
he
whoever
should get a ring?
So whoever the lowest, like, I don't know. That's the wrong way
to
say
it. No, you're reaching.
Like
you know, here's what's happened. I've known you long enough.
Uh-huh.
Here's what's happened to Tiki right now. He doesn't actually believe this.
I do believe this. Because he's part of the team.
But he's being a little, what's the word?
I'm not being contrarian. I'm not
not contrarian. You're being a little stubborn. And you're reaching for these examples that are nowhere near applicable.
But I think it matters.
Not one of them.
Avery Bradley was part of the Lakers for...
He was.
80% of the season. Probably really 90% of it when you think about it, given the postseason, or the eight games left in the postseason. I mean, he's part of it.
Nah.
He's part of the conversation. And the fact that he's not going to be there because of the coronavirus is not... I mean,
well, he doesn't have the virus. He's electing not to go.
Yeah,
which
because he doesn't
want to
get sick. And he doesn't want his daughter or son. One of his family members has a respiratory issue. So
much respect.
I mean,
you didn't win.
He's part of the team. That's what being part of the team is all about.
Hey, all right. I mean, listen. Just to be clear, I'm not saying that the Lakers shouldn't offer him one.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that that's the teamly thing, if you will, thing to do. You can't actually accept one. I mean, come on.
I would. Why not?
I don't know, man. Let me give you an example that applies to me. You give you with your running back. Now, this isn't a great example either, but like there's like certain pride where you're like, all right, you got to cut it off. So my last year at Marist, we were okay, nothing special, okay. Now I graduate. The next year, we set a school record for wins. We go to the regionals. Right? We go to the NCAA tournament. Of course, I missed this. That's why they got there, because they got better players, to be honest with you. And they get they play J.D. Drew.
Okay.
J.D. Drew in Florida State, right?
Yep.
And we lose 2-1. But they get and it's a gorgeous ring. It's a big ruby. It's sick, dude. I would give anything to have that behind me in this trophy case, right? You don't think when I go to social events, whether it's in the city.
Yeah, but you were part of that team,
but
man.
But here's what my buddies that I played with that actually were there for the next year. You know what they say?
What's that?
Yo, B, you should have a ring. You were part of the foundation. That doesn't make me feel good. That was a part of the foundation. That wasn't good enough to get one.
I think the Giants did that for Ernie Accorsi. Even though he was not the general manager when they won the champion.
I'm almost grandfathered in a little bit.
Well, because he built the team.
Yeah, yeah,
you know what I mean? But
I like that.
I don't know if – I think he did. I think they gave him a championship ring.
See, I like that, though.
But so how is that any different than what Avery Bradley as an important cog of this Lakers squad for 90% of the season who opts out for a very legitimate reason? How is it any different?
Not questioning the legitimacy. And you know what? We probably exhausted it 2 minutes longer than we needed to because he's making a decision that's good for him, and the Lakers are doing the right thing.
Last question then.
Yes.
J.R. Smith is going to play, I don't know, 8 games and then in the postseason.
Yep.
Does he deserve one?
Yes, because he'll be more instrumental in actually winning playoff games. Yes. Yes. That's the wrong question answer to ask me if you think I'm going to come full circle on this. All right, let's get Axe update, and we'll come back inbounds, out of bounds. Clayton Kershaw, he gets the ball on opening day. That's what aces do. But is he still their ace? Is he still one of the best in the game? We'll hit that after Axe update, which is coming at you right now. Here's Rich. All right, inbounds, out of bounds, coming up in a second. Great start. Hopefully you're having a good Wednesday. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Before we get to a little IBOB, it is time to ask the pros, where we give you a chance to ask us anything you want, brought to you by our friends at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Pretty simple drill. Just drop us a tweet at CBS Sports Radio. That's at CBS Sports Radio. Use the hashtag AskThePros to identify it more clearly, and we'll answer it a little later in the show. So the better it is, the more stimulating a debate or a compelling question, better chance we'll get to it. And we'll give you some props on the air as well. So get them in now at CBS Sports Radio, hashtag Ask the Pros. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts, all your car care needs. Guarantee low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every single day. All right, top of the next hour, 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific, hour 2 of the show. Teek and I will get into this. And it's interesting where it hasn't been positioned this way, you know, that acrimonious, just disconnected, disjointed feel that Major League Baseball, the owners and the union had really since March and still have now with the, you know, the sloppiness of the COVID testing being brought to the facilities. And there's issues with that, not to mention the money, and it's only 60 games, blah, blah, blah. You know, Teague and I hit that pretty much every day. It was a big central story to the future of baseball. With football, there's a lot of warning signs, but it's not nearly getting the play of baseball, and we want to know why, and we want to know, will it ultimately be to the sport's detriment? So that's going to be a great conversation. That's coming up at 4 Eastern, a little more than 15 minutes from now, but right now it's time for Inbounds, Out of Bounds. Teague, you good to go?
Yep, let's get it.
Let's hit it.
Anything can happen in sports, and often does. What's right? What's wrong? And who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and Out of Bounds now. With Tiki and Tierney.
Speaking of the NFL, Roger Goodell and the NFL have come out publicly in support of racial justice issues and injustice. Obviously, this has been a huge part of the news cycle for weeks now. But Cowboys owner Jerry Jones has remained eerily and oddly quiet. A few weeks ago, defensive lineman Gerald McCoy said, quote, "His silence definitely means a lot because in any other situation, he would have something to say," end quote. Now, Dontari Poe told Bleacher Report that he's a D-tackle, 2-time Pro Bowler. He said, quote, "I hope Jerry comes out and shows some support. Even if you're not going to be at the forefront, we need to know that we have your support," end quote. So things are stirring inside Cowboy land, and Jerry still has yet to expound on this at all. In or out, Jerry Jones does need to show his black players he supports them.
You know, I'm going to say inbounds to this, BT, and he doesn't have to be, you know, out there with, you know, leading protests like we've seen Mark Cuban and other sports owners do. But I do think that he does need to say something. And look, it's not going to affect free agency. I know a lot of people will say that. But I do think that, like, down the line, it might have an impact on his reputation. Think about this, and I sent you guys this article on our Slack channel earlier because I had forgotten about it, honestly. Bruce Maxwell, who was the only MLB player to kneel. Remember this back in 2017, in August of 2017, he took a knee and he did it for the
was he a catcher?
He was a catcher for the A's. Knee for the last nine or so games of the season. Yep. And it ultimately ended his career. He ended up, I think he's playing in Mexico now in some league, and he lives there, and he's permanently residing south of the border. But, you know, you look back, and this article was asking the question, like, where are you, MLB? Where are you, black players? Where are you, owners, et cetera, et cetera? And this is just three short years later. So I think that history has a way in today's society of catching up really quickly. Mm-hmm. And if Jerry Jones remains silent on this for who knows what reasons, whether it's monetary or political or whatever, I think history is going to catch up to him, and it won't judge him fairly. Mm.
I agree. I agree with this. For the reasons that you documented, you don't have to go as far as others have gone. If that's not your comfort zone, that's fine. We'll respect it. Mm-hmm. But you can't be so, you know, contrary to, you know, what you usually are. You're so willing to weigh in on everything. You were so willing to weigh in on, you know, being adamant and inflexible about your players not kneeling. You had no problem saying that. And listen, this is not about pacifying or placating people. That's, you know, just because somebody wants you to do something, if it's not in your heart and your soul, then you shouldn't have to do it. And that applies to Jerry with this. That applies to everybody with everything, really, outside of law, anything that's legal that you have to abide by, literally. But I do think this could be, and I'm with you that it won't impact free agency, because when it comes to the cheese, they can always pay if they have cap room. But in terms of being a deterrent this season, could be a little divisive. It could be a little divisive.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It could be. I don't know that it will be, but this team has a chance to be somewhat special, and you don't need any outside influences now permeating the inside out that get you off the track of paying attention to football. So eventually Jerry's going to do something and say something. Why not just do it now and ease the minds of some players who really wonder where you stand on this? I'm with you. I'm saying bounce.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, Joel Embiid, one of the best bigs in the NBA. Might be the best. Him, Joker, is a short list there in terms of bigs. But he's got a hard time, and he's had a hard time staying healthy. Three-time All-Star told the media he wants to shoulder a bigger load for the Sixers.
I know what I'm capable of, and I know what my teammates think of me. I know I'm capable of carrying the team. So it's all about me being assertive. If I feel like I'm not getting the ball, I just gotta, you know, talk to them and, you know, do what I have to do. But at the end of the day, I should never be in a position to complain about, you know, not getting the ball just because of who I am. So I believe I can carry the team.
Okay. As we know, NBA offenses have changed a lot the last 10 years, moved away from the conventional post, and obviously you got to hit threes, although he can step out and shoot, as we know, in or out. Embiid is good enough and reliable enough to carry the Sixers on his shoulders.
I'm going to say out of bounds of that, BT, only because of how the game is played. If the game was still even like halfway played in the half court, because it's just not, I would say, yeah, you could run some plays through Joel Embiid, but so much of the NBA these days is fast breaks and three-point shots and, you know, efficiency and shots per 100 and things of that nature, like these advanced metrics that teams are really paying attention to. Can he be one of the most important parts? Absolutely, because he's a good, great defender. He's big. He can shoot from range. But I think in order for a team to say it, for a guy to be to use that cliche, you kind of got to be the distributor and the primary scorer. And he's not always going to be that.
See, it's funny. I don't even look at the distribution aspect, which is somewhat pertinent. I'm not saying that it's not, but my answer is out of bounds here, because the second part of the equation, the word reliable, he's anything but reliable physically.
Yeah, he's
his first 2 years didn't play a second, and then the 4 years since, he's played 31, 63, 64, and 44 this year. So there is just, you know, that he has been unable to find that, cross that elusive bridge of of being reliable in the physical sense. There's been weight fluctuations. There's been some slight attitude situations. I thought he turned the corner. Remember when that triple from the corner dropped four bounces from Kawhi, and obviously the Raptors won that series. I mean, he was in tears, and I'm like, that's a good. People were clowning him. I thought that was a great sign. It showed this fortitude, this desire to win. I'm like, that is a great sign. If I'm a Sixers fan, this guy hates losing. I want to see that. He's motivated to be great. He's motivated to win. And then this year, what happened? Little regression, little out of shape, usual assortment of injuries, out of bounds. He's a tantalizing player in terms of talent. If he's not there every night and he's not in shape every night, how can you say the answer is in bounds? It's out of bounds.
Are you in or are you out?
Let's get to this. A little baseball talk. Aces. Clayton Kershaw, arguably the best of his generation. I would actually say that that's inarguable. He is the best. He's got three Cy Youngs and the NL MVP in 2014. But his ERA's, you know, gone up the last couple of years from 1.69, which is minuscule, to 3.03 a year ago. So it's not like it just ballooned, but there are signs of, you know, of a little gradual wear and tear here. Despite the decline, the Dodgers announced yesterday that he will make his franchise record ninth straight opening day start for the team. It's a great honor for a great franchise with a lot of history, whether it's, you know, obviously Koufax or Fernando or Oral Hershiser, a lot of horses top that rotation over the years. In or out, the 32-year-old Kershaw's career is in the decline and won't win another Cy Young during his career.
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I think I have to say in bounds, because he's certainly in the decline. He's had the injury issues. Not that that doesn't mean he can't have great seasons.
Mm-hmm.
But the other side of this is that he's going to win another Cy Young with Justin Verlander still pitching great, and Max Scherzer in this this side of the ledger, DeGrom still with the Mets.
Oh, yeah.
I can't see him winning another Cy Young, even though I'm not going to say he's washed up.
Well, he's definitely not washed up. And, you know, the one stat that I've always looked at is batting average against, because it speaks to a level of comfort in the batter's box, and his number's still respectable. It's very respectable.
Yeah.
Here's the problem, though. To win Cy Young's, you got to take the baseball every 5 days. And the last 4 years, he just doesn't make the amount of starts. I mean, you know, his back's been jacked up. There's been intermittent flare-ups. When you lose that sharpness in terms of repetition, the breaking ball goes from a plus-plus to just merely a very good pitch. You know, 1, 2, 3 miles per hour off the radar in terms of the fastball. He's still really good. He's just not the same guy. And there's no shame in that. He's going to be 32 years of age. Hour two coming up. NFL players, acrimony like baseball. We'll hit it. We'll explore it.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.